It's Tuesday, and Mr. Buckmaster and his lovely bride are on vacation again. And this is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, and we're broadcasting from the Green Things Oklo Village Studio, and the Buckmaster Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We will probably not be using the live line today because I am delighted once again for the sixth or seventh time to have James Real here with me for the hour in the studio. James, of course, is the director of classical music and at KUAT and Arizona Public Media. And today we're going to do a musical show and we're going to be talking about something that I think is really timely, because we're going to be talking about war and giving musical examples. James, welcome.
Thank you, Shelley. It's always a great pleasure. And I was thinking that, we have a lot of examples to talk about and a lot of musical responses to the idea of war, but it strikes me that music has always been a component of war.
Absolutely.
You remember that old painting, Spirit of 76, mm-hmm. with the two drummers and the kid with the fife marching through the battlefield? Well, through history, you always had some sort of musician keeping time as the troops marched into battle, because they had to stay in formation. So you had somebody there keeping them together. Then you had somebody with something to blow into so they'd know when to charge or retreat. So music was part of the battle itself.
I'm going to thank John, our producer, who's in the control room now, with a very complex set of musical cues that he's going to have to handle for the hour. And the first thing I'm going to do is throw him a curveball. So, John, if you'd go back to the introduction music, can you do that? Because this is an example, and it was a little bit down. This is an example of what James was just talking about. This is Beethoven's Wellington's Victory. Marching into battle. And so composers, classical composers, popular composers, have viewed war as not only an excuse, but a reason to express themselves about that war throughout history.
And it isn't just anti-war sentiment, as
Absolutely.
You might expect, but there are lots of pieces capitalizing on war. For example, one of the greatest hits of the second half of the 15th century was a little ditty called L'Homme Armé, the Armed Man.
Right.
And very few lyrics. It was about how the armed man is to be feared, put on your chainmail and go. The origins are kind of murky, but it's thought that maybe it was a response to the fall of Constantinople, the Byzantine Empire, which was Christian and just fallen to the Ottoman Turks, who were Muslim. And so there was talk in Europe about getting together another crusade. And L'Homme Armé might have been a kind of recruiting song. It became so popular that it was the basis of numerous masses. You would go into church, you'd hear the mass, and the mass would be based in some degree on L'Homme Armé.
Right. So composers would use music to help recruit and help get people riled up about being part of the war. However, one of the things we know about war is that it contains an ugly little thing called death.
Oh, yes.
Let's take a listen to a kind of ironic movement from Gustav Mahler, the German composer around the turn of the 19th, 20th century, in his funeral march from the First Symphony. Well, wait a second, James. That's Frère Jacques in a minor key.
Mahler knew it as Bruder Martin. We sometimes call it Are You Sleeping? But yeah, it's a kiddie tune used in a minor key to kind of make fun of this idea of the funeral march, because Mahler here was inspired by a very strange engraving.
Yeah.
It's a picture of forest animals in a procession of hunter's funeral. So the animals, the deer and the rabbits and everything, they're on their hind legs walking along, weeping into handkerchiefs. There's a group of cats in front playing merry music, apparently. But this is the enemy weeping over the death right. of their adversary. Very strange. And yet he gets very serious in the middle of the movement.
Oh, absolutely. And it's clear that he's making a commentary on war. And one of the things that we have to talk about a little bit when we talk about European war and we talk about the 20th century European war that's going on in Ukraine today in the 21st century, which we thought those kinds of things were kind of over with. Mm-hmm. But they aren't over with, and people are dying every day. But Europe, by the end of the 1800s, was used to almost continual war for 1,000 years. And so to see that composers like Beethoven and Mahler, and we'll get into some others, were kind of obsessed with painting a musical picture of what war might be like is really to be expected, I think.
And war was right next door, too. It's not like here in the United States, when there's a war in the world, it tends to be someplace far away, and we may send our people to it, but those of us here at home aren't usually directly affected by it. Those Europeans were.
Yes. So that's a great point, but let's take a look now at a musical example of when war is right here at home. In this case, the war is the Revolutionary War, and this is from the show 1776. It's by Sherman Edwards, and this is a solo sung at the end of the first act by a soldier in the war. They were all volunteers, of course, and war wasn't going exactly the way he expected.
Mama, hey mama, come looking for me. I'm here in the meadow by the red maple tree. Mama, hey mama, look sharp, here I be.
So that's really different from drums that you march to and victory stuff that composers talk about. This is from the grave.
It's a young man, a boy, really, who he's still attached to his mother. His mother's certainly attached to him, and it is the fate of many of these women to go out into the fields after battle looking for their loved ones.
Right. Right. And so 1776, if our listeners aren't familiar with it, it's every July 4th. It's a show that I have a DVD of and I put on, and it's just great fun to watch. And it's a very patriotic, very stirring show about the beginnings of our country. But right there in the middle is this. And it never fails to break me up. Well, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about different aspects of war and how composers and lyric writers have dealt with it in the various segments of the show. What I'd like to do now is just remind everybody that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. It's home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. It's open Tuesday through Sunday for breakfast and lunch, and treat yourself to their mouth-watering pastries, including the famous Danish Kringle, which I've had and is just, you know, too wonderful for words. Mona'sDanishBakery.com or BuckmasterShow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. What we're going to do now is take a break, and we'll be back with James Reel, and we'll talk more about music and war.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Life isn't about money. But how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, and I'm here with James Reel for the full hour, and we're talking about composers and lyricists and how they deal with war. I should say that I just got back from a week in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and that's really interesting. You know, our friends over in Silver City, New Mexico, and Grand County are ready to welcome you back with open arms. I mean, the folks in these resort places have been dealing with a pandemic and the business effects of that pandemic, but back in these places now, they're just ready, you know, for people to come back and be part of their lives again. There's so much to do in Silver City and Grand County, New Mexico, you know, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there's plenty of social distancing, and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. You know, for a complete listing of many things to do and the great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. One of the reasons I wanted to read this particular promo right now was because coming back from Santa Fe and the opera in Santa Fe, where you know, I was dealing with things that are war-related. I mean, the first four-and-a-half-hour opera we went to on Tuesday night was Tristan and Isolde, which, you know, starts off at the end of a war and is military throughout it. And this morning, I was at my training session with my, physical fitness trainer, Joe Garcia, and trying to explain to him what Tristan and Isolde is all about. And this is a person who is not an opera person, but how do you talk about, for instance, you sat for 4.5 hours at an opera and you didn't get home till 3 a.m. And he really lent me his ear and helped me kind of get my head together for this show. So thank you, James, for being here.
My pleasure.
We're going to look at deception, which has always been a part of the sales pitch for war. You know, when we are asked as a country, as a nation, as a world sometimes to involve ourselves in a conflict. The people, you know, in promotion are always out to figure out ways to make it look clean and surgical and what we need to do. But war isn't that way. So one of the things that composers have done is presented the irony of that, presented what may start off sounding very innocent and pure, but lurking in the middle of the song is something much more devastating. Mm-hmm. So let's listen to Candor and Ebbs, a selection from Cabaret called Tomorrow Belongs to Me. Give us an introduction into how this song begins and how it ends up where it just did.
The setting is a beer garden,
right?
In the 1930s, in Germany, and in the middle of everything, in the stage version, I think it's a waiter. In the movie, mm-hmm. it's a youth stands up and starts singing what sounds like a German folk song, and eventually the other people in the beer garden start chiming in. And this is very effective in the movie. The camera moves out, and you see gradually that the youth is dressed in a Hitler Youth uniform.
Right.
So they're using this uplifting, optimistic, hopeful,
angelic face.
Tune. Yeah, and it's really about the Nazi desire to take over the world.
Right, right. So here, Candor and Ebb are starting off a song in a very peaceful way, and you think this is just the hope and aspiration of a young kid. But you see that those hopes and aspirations have been seriously polluted by what was going on in Germany in this time, probably 1938, 1939, mm-hmm. just before the war began. So there was plenty of time for propaganda to work its way into the German culture.
What really interests me is the life of this song beyond Cabaret.
Oh, yes.
Because people are always taking it out of context. There was a Jewish youth group, summer camp, that wanted to perform it because it's a nice tune, Tomorrow right. Belongs to Me. Well, they didn't really realize what the implications were. Well, the song was written by two nice Jewish boys anyway.
Right, right.
Then, in the mid-1970s, there was, believe it or not, this neo-Nazi group of gay men, if you can imagine such a thing. They existed from the mid-70s to the mid-80s, and they used this as their anthem.
Oh, my gosh.
So it can be used
Context. Against
the people who are using it against the people.
Context is so important. I'd like to play another example of what happens when one ideal gets into conflict with another. And this is an operatic excerpt. It's from Madame Butterfly by Puccini. And it's Act One. In Act One, there is a whole scene with the family where Pinkerton, Benjamin Franklin Pinkerton, who is the heroic tenor in the opera, who has no redeeming social values whatsoever. The guy is an all-time cad.
But he's a good tenor.
He better be. But what he's doing here is talking to the American consul in Japan just before he gets married to a Japanese 15-year-old geisha. And he's talking about how Americans went abroad are vagabonds and how they can do just about anything and get away with it. And there's a funny theme that you will hear. So, John, would you play that excerpt for us?
Mm-hmm.
So, dovunque amando lo Yankee vagabondo, wherever in the world a Yankee goes, he can get away with doing all sorts of nasty things.
And the Yankee suffers no consequences.
No consequences. And, of course, what happens, what you hear at the beginning of this solo is the Star-Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm.
And Puccini, who was certainly not anti-American in any way, was just pointing out that patriotism can be used in many, many ways.
Yeah, and this is an opera derived from a play, derived from a short story,
right,
derived from some stories that somebody told the original author, that really takes the role of the heroine, the Japanese geisha, the 15-year-old Japanese girl, as the most sympathetic element.
And in the end, heroic.
Right. And it's about the Japanese people. It's
right.
Not about the Americans. Pinkerton's kind of hardly in the opera. He's there in the beginning. He's there at the end with his American wife at the end. But it's really all about the Japanese. And did you know, Shelley, you probably did, that this opera has been performed at the Metropolitan Opera almost every season since it was premiered, except during a stretch during World War II.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right. It is, I think, the second most performed opera at the Metropolitan. La Boheme, I think, is number one. But what Puccini was getting at here was, I think, then translated in the, when I say recent future, recent past, I mean just the past month, by a new opera that I heard in Santa Fe called M. Butterfly,
mm-hmm.
which takes the idea of the Asian woman and how the Asian woman is portrayed and abused throughout history and just wrings the neck of it. And so this was also a play. It was also a movie, M. Butterfly, and now turned into an opera. It was a really heartbreaking thing to watch as the Asian woman, who is the victim in so many cases in the arts, becomes the purveyor of strength, and not in any way that is friendly to the West, because she's a spy for the Chinese. And she lures in the Pinkerton character. In this case, it's not a Pinkerton. He's not named Pinkerton, but he's a French diplomat, and he falls in love with her. And she winds up being his downfall, and he commits suicide at the end rather than the butterfly character. But the juxtaposition of roles is amazing to watch, and I think this was the first production of the opera, but the movie M. Butterfly is well worth renting and spending some time with.
Indeed.
Now, we have to say, though, that composers sometimes will take a patriotic song or a song identified with a country and paint it in its most positive way. And what I'd like to do now is to play a short excerpt from The Sound of Music. This is Edelweiss by Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright. You look happy to meet me.
So there's nothing ironic about that at all. This is a man singing about his national flower that blooms in the Alps. In the midst of the buildup to World War II, this family is just torn apart by the war that is coming. And then there's this moment of quiet where, without any irony at all, in this case, the singer is Christopher Plummer, but the character of Von Trapp sings this song with his kids kind of surrounding him that says, you know, there's things about our country that are really worth fighting for maybe and maybe worth saving.
It's a patriotic song that sounds like an old folk song, but is not. And it's an anti-Nazi song because he sings this in the context of about to be forced to fall in with the Nazis who've taken over Austria.
Right.
He doesn't want to do that. So there's nothing in the song at all that says the Nazis are bad, the Germans are bad. It just says how wonderful my homeland is.
Right. Quick story before the break. We were in Austria at the big palace, and it was the 1 year anniversary of the fall of the wall. And the Austrian guide looks around the parking lot and says, "I'm sorry for all the delay and everything," he says in English. "There haven't been this many Germans here since the Anschluss." So let's take a break now, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussions of war and music.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Well, welcome back. This is Shelley Fishman filling in for Bill Buckmaster, and I'm very happy to be here with James Reel, the director of classical music at KUAT and Arizona Public Media, and we're talking about war, and we're talking about music, and we're talking about things that James and I have been talking about for, this is like the sixth or seventh time,
yeah,
for the full hour here while Bill and his wife have been on vacation. In this third segment, we're going to take a look at how composers have really viewed war from the perspective of trying to bring clarity to it. And, you know, in the 19th century, composers, you know, typically didn't get too bogged down with the subtleties of maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. When they, you know, jumped in with both feet. Not always, but very often. So what I'd like to do is start this with a musical example, not in a war between countries, but the war for the soul of man. And this is an example from Giuseppe Verdi's Requiem Mass, and it's the trumpet call from the Dies Irae, and we'll talk about it once we've listened to it. It's the most spectacular trumpet call I've ever heard. Stuff. James, do you recall the first time you heard the Requiem and the Dies Irae?
I do indeed, and I was fortunate enough to hear it the first time live in a concert hall, where it would have much more impact than from a recording. And I was sitting there in the Tucson Music Hall, and it was a Tucson Symphony performance, and the trumpets were coming from somewhere that was not the stage,
right.
So you had these strange sounds coming from places you didn't expect, and the gradual build-up, and then eventually you get the work with the big bass drum, and the chorus comes in, and it was just overwhelming.
It was. My first hearing of this was also a live performance, but it was in New York on Christmas Eve at a service... at St. Thomas Cathedral, which was right around the corner from where I lived, and it was no orchestra. There was an organ and a full chorus, and of course you can't be without the trumpets, so they had some trumpets there as well. But when I first heard it, it was, what in the world is this all about? So much is going on with the chorus and the drums and it was hard for me as 17 or an 18-year-old, to kind of make out what was going on and what Verdi was getting at. This is the centerpiece of the Requiem, really, in this particular rendition of the Requiem Mass, and it contains several solos, and it goes on and on and on. But that trumpet call, to me, came to represent the drawing you in into a mood of participation, so that you felt you had to be part of this.
Yeah, well, that's the philosophy behind it. The idea is that the trumpets are calling the souls out of their tombs, out of their graves, to stand before the throne of God to be judged. That's
right.
The final day of judgment. And Dies Irae means day of wrath,
right.
So some people aren't going to come out so well. but then it's interesting that you say you heard it on Christmas Eve, because it's sort of like Santa now
think.
Checking
right,
his list
right, right.
twice to see who's naughty and nice.
why they chose that on a Christmas Eve, I don't know. But there it was, and sitting in this huge cathedral, Saint Thomas in New York is probably, other than the big cathedral up in the northwest part of Manhattan, is certainly bigger than the Catholic cathedral in St. Patrick's. It's a spectacular medieval looking cathedral. Of course, it was built at, you know, the turn of the 20th century, but it was a spectacular place to listen to that particular music.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other ways of getting people to be kind of involved in a war that's either underway or kind of looming. And that's by using, and we heard some of this earlier with the Puccini use of the Star Spangled Banner. And in Wellington's victory, we also hear God Save the King or Queen, depending upon who's in the throne at the time in Britain. But Tchaikovsky.
Well, let me just go back to that because there's an interesting bit of trivia. The music representing the French side was not the Marseillaise, because in Vienna at that time it was treasonous to perform the Marseillaise because they were still at odds with the French. So Beethoven had to choose an old French folk song about going off to war to represent the French.
Right. Tchaikovsky, however, had no such limitations.
Right.
And so in his very famous 1812 overture, which talks about the French invading Russia and the Russians' ability to repel the French, Tchaikovsky uses two national anthems. He uses first the Marseillaise, which of course you couldn't have used in Vienna at that time, but then he shows the victory of the Russian people with God Save the Tsar. And this is going to be a little bit awkward because he never puts these things exactly together in the music. So John's going to have to play the first part of it, which is the French marching into and camping around Moscow. And then we're going to get a fade out and a fade back to Tchaikovsky's use of God Save the Tsar. No doubt who won that battle.
Well, it kind of puts a rosy glow on what actually happened, because the Russians endured more than they prevailed. They just wore the French down. It was the Russian winter and little guerrilla attacks as they were trying to retreat that literally decimated. I think like 10% of the French army managed to get out of Russia.
It seems to me that happened again.
Yeah, you know, there's a whole symphony about that, too, when the Nazis blockaded Leningrad. Shostakovich wrote an entire 75-minute symphony about that.
Right, and the fact that sometimes nature and weather and geography is as good a defense as the best-trained army.
Mm-hmm.
And it just calls into question what's happening in Ukraine today, that here's this Russian army that's supposed to be very sophisticated and very large and very well staffed and manned, and Ukraine is doing just fine, it
mm-hmm.
seems. Yeah. A lot of death. 80,000 Russian casualties they're estimating right now, and 200 Ukrainian soldiers a day, 100 to 200, taking casualties. This is not funny.
No.
Hey, John, I'm going to cut out this Pacific Overture as Someone in a Tree. I had another musical example here. It's kind of hard to do, and we're running kind of a little short on time. But just to talk about it a little bit, the perspective of what a war is about and what is happening on the ground can change depending upon the context. Mm-hmm. And in Pacific Overtures, what Stephen Sondheim, who wrote both the music and the lyrics, is showing is the peace conference in Japan, where the Japanese have one version of what happened at that peace conference, and the Americans have a completely different version. In fact, depending upon who in Japan you asked, the versions of what was going on during that peace conference are very, very different. And that is so often what we're hearing in this war today, that depending upon who you're listening to, it's either a victory for the Russians or a victory for the Ukrainians, or it's so hard to know because you're getting different perspectives. What's really going on?
Sometimes it just comes down to who's got the best tune. Who do you believe?
Well, we're not going to be able to play this particular example, but it's the issue is somebody's in a tree listening, and if he was there, it went on, and if it went on, he was listening. But then as the song goes on, you get different versions of the same truth, and that can happen a lot. One thing that there's only one version of, however, is that since 1970, Green thinks, how do you like this segue? Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. No conflict about that whatsoever. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that is also home to the Socolo Village and all of those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art pieces. Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsarizona.com and socolovillage.com. We're going to take our last break, and when we come back, we'll have a couple more musical examples, and we'll kind of close out this segment with James Real and myself on War and Music.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. For more than a half century, Tucson gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Tom Sullivan here, inviting you to join the rest of us who spend every weeknight from 7 to 10 with the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And we're back. Shelley Fishman and James Reel sitting in for Bill Buckmaster here at the Green Thing Socolo Village studio. The live line, which we're not using today, but it should remind you, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're talking about war and music. And in our final segment, what we're going to talk about today is how war is unambiguously told by a composer, but then that lack of ambiguity can creep in ways you wouldn't suspect. So the first excerpt here is from Verdi's opera Aida. It's the scene where they actually declare war on the Ethiopian army, and the words are guerra, guerra, ritorna vincitor. War, war, return victorious. And a funny thing happens, and we'll talk about it after we hear the excerpt. Well, you want to get up and march?
Oh, yeah, that's so stirring. I want to sign up now.
Well, you know, one of the people who sang in that excerpt is the title star of the show, Aida, and there's a funny thing going on there.
Mm-hmm.
She's the daughter, as she's a prisoner of war, she's the daughter of the king of Ethiopia.
Aha, uh-huh. So she's got a conflict of interest because she's the daughter of the king of the enemy, but she's in love.
With
Rhadames, the Egyptian general.
Who has just been appointed to lead the war effort.
Right.
And so she gets a little bit carried away with Verdi's composition, you know, Ritorna Vincitor, and she sings it. And then as the music fades out, she goes, oh, my God, what did I just do? And she doesn't quite know how to resolve that. But not knowing how to resolve your personal problems with a war is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly not uncommon in classical music and in classical opera. We're going to stick with Verdi for a second because we're going to go to another opera. This one's a little earlier. It's called La Forza del Destino, which is The Force of Destiny. And this is Leonora's aria, which is Pace, Pace, Mio Dio, in which she is involved with people in her life who are on opposite sides of a conflict, as Aida was.
Mm-hmm.
And She's desperate, and so she sings at the beginning of this aria, Pace, Pace, Mio Dio, please, God, give us peace. We're going to listen to that, and then you and I will chat for a second, and we'll listen to the end of the aria as well. That's about as plaintive as it gets.
Mm-hmm. And as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, Shelley, but I think at this point in the opera, her father has been accidentally killed
right.
by her lover who has skipped town. She's gone to live in a convent.
Right.
And some time has gone by, and she's still suffering from this conflict. And one form of peace is a longing for death.
Exactly. There's another irony in this particular excerpt, chosen, I think, kind of deliberately by us to represent not only the irony of what the character is singing, but the irony of who's singing it.
Mm-hmm.
The soprano who nailed that in the beginning and will nail it at the end is a non-Italian lady called Anna Netrebko. Anna Netrebko is one of the big operatic stars of our generation. And as has happened since the fall of the Berlin Wall and since the fall of the Soviet Union, is that Eastern opera singers, mostly Slavic, have dominated to a very great extent the operatic scene in the United States and in Western Europe. Anna Netrebko being a perfect example of that. I heard a recording of a live performance from Berlin yesterday of, I should remember and I don't, not an Italian in the cast, and it was an Italian opera, all Slavic names. Ms. Netrebko was asked by the management of the Metropolitan Opera to denounce the Russian invasion of Ukraine and couldn't do it. Ms. Netrebko is no longer welcome to sing in the United States.
There's some argument over this because
sure.
Some people say you got to cut her to some slack because in order to promote her career, she's had to cozy up to Putin and say nice things, and maybe just avoiding promoting the invasion is enough. Well, it's true in many cases that you do what you need to do to get ahead if it doesn't hurt anybody, but Netrebko's gotten ahead.
Yeah.
And if anyone's in a position to oppose it without serious repercussions, she is.
You would think. And she probably lives in the West now anyway, in Europe. But as a character, as Leonora in Forza del Destino, and now personally, she sees the futility of peace. Peace is just not something I can hope for, and both as a character and as a singer. She nails that B flat. I mean, it's just absolutely spectacular to listen to. And yet, her character nor her as a singer can come to a just peace mm-hmm. with the world.
So true.
James, we're at the end of our show. Thank you so much for being part of this. Thank you so much for doing this with me. And
it's always a great time, and I enjoy it even when the subject is so terribly depressing.
Yeah, you know, and some of the things we heard were rousing.
Oh yeah,
but this one was not. I'd like to thank John again for his efforts in helping us put this together, and wish Bill and his lovely wife the best on their vacation.